All right, well, tomorrow is the 20th anniversary of the attacks on New York City and D.C. and really on America on 9/11. So we have a couple really cool interviews. One is Richard Marcinko. He's the founder of SEAL Team 6. And the other is a firefighter, Brenda Berkman, who was there that day and ran in and did what she could do. So we're going to have all that after the end of the closing jingle. Very cool. So please stick around for that. Again, that's right after the closing jingle.
Why'd you say it twice?
Because we're in that habit.
Why'd you say it twice?
Why did I say it twice?
I said it thrice.
Thrice?
I have asked you thrice.
Oh, no, if it's twice and thrice, how do you get to the, what's the fourth one?
Twice. Twice.
No, that's five.
It's quad. No,
quad.
It's
twice. Why? I know I'm about to cuss. It's gonna make me cuss.
He's gonna unintentionally cuss. Can we start the podcast now?
Yes.
Okay.
And now the Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Big D and Bubba, they have a show 5 days a week, but they don't get to say everything that's on their mind, so they have an extra one, and that's how we get the podcast, the podcast, the podcast. Big D and Bubba Podcast, the podcast, the podcast. Big D and Bubba Podcast.
It's a wonderful thing. Thank you so much for having us on today. As you know, it's a very special weekend. We've got the 20th anniversary of 9/11. Coming up here. That is so crazy that it has been 20 years. And I know it seems like in some ways it's been 800 years, and in other ways it feels like it's been 8 years.
Yeah,
it is so strange and weird and surreal. And wow, what can I say? But wow, America, how much we've changed in 20 years. Thank you to O'Reilly Auto Parts for, you know, being our sponsor here on the podcast as we do it from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day.
I want to talk about what it was
There's no...
Yeah, where's the gold?
Hold on.
Oh, I'm sorry. You had a gold?
I was about to do a world premiere.
Hold on just 1 second.
Okay.
Hold on just 1 second.
Oh, okay.
That's your gold?
That's our gold this week.
Okay, good.
Hold on just one second.
She said it several more times.
Yeah.
Every time she would come back, she would tell us to hold on just one more second.
Hold on just one second.
I love her.
She's adorable.
I don't know how many radio shows that are currently together were actually, minus Carson, the three of us in the room that morning. And I just want to talk about that feeling. If you don't know what it's like to do a live radio show, when something like that happens, we immediately start thinking about what we're going to say next on the air. And so I remember we didn't have a TV. Now, today, if you can see in the background on the shots on the video portion
there's
of the podcast,
TV
we have
monitors.
TVs, monitors everywhere on different news networks, one of them just on ESPN in case, you know,
some
sports
massive
news,
sports thing comes out.
But we didn't have a TV in the studio. So Matt Kennedy, who was the program director of the news station that was in our building, came running in and screamed, "A plane just hit the World Trade Center," and then ran back out. So we went into the newsroom to watch that little. By the way, that TV was
It was a 15-inch television.
Little tiny thing. We're all crowded around it.
It's like the size of an iPad, except the resolution back then wasn't like HD or anything like that.
It was tube TV.
This was tube TV, VGA. It was terrible quality.
So we're live on the air. So there's a song playing. We only stood there for long enough to look at it and then walk back into the studio and go, what do we do now? And the next, Bubba said, we should get Marcinko on the show. So we had gotten to know Dick Marcinko, who was, you know, this crazy, awesome guy, this Navy SEAL, and like one of the, I always say, the toughest person I ever personally met, Dick Marcinko. So we called him to ask, do you think this might be terrorism? But by the time we got on the air with him, like 2 seconds into him being on the air with us, the second plane hit the second tower. And that was it.
Mm-hmm.
That we knew. But it's just crazy to think, like, as a radio show, the first thought we had was we should get an expert on the air to talk about what's happening.
Well, as pilots, we both knew that because the TV was saying it was a single-engine Cessna that had hit the first tower. Yeah. And Big D and I are both like, that hole is way too big to be a Cessna. There is no possible way. And sure enough, it wasn't, you know. And when we saw the second plane hit, then, you know, obviously we knew everything was kind of going crazy. But it was a day that I will never forget. And I remembered leaving work. I was supposed to go fly that day. And I went straight from work to the airport. I was taking my flight lessons before I became a pilot. I was taking my flight lessons, and I show up, and I remembered walking in, and they were like, yeah, sorry, everything's grounded. And I'm like, yeah, I know, I heard that on the news. They're like, yeah, no, we cannot fly at all, not even locally, over our own airport. So it was really strange. And being there on the airport with zero motion, zero anything going on. There was no refueling trucks. There were no baggage carriers. There was nothing. Everything was just at a standstill, and I had never seen it like that before in my life.
No one knew. I mean, we thought it was a small plane, or, well, like Bob was saying, we didn't think it was, but people did. And then we're like, oh, there's... Then we heard about Los Angeles. There was a plane headed to Los Angeles.
All these rumors.
People were worried about the Sears Tower.
Mm-hmm.
That one came up pretty quick.
Yeah.
Pantex, Amarillo, the nuclear play. I mean, just all kinds of crazy stuff.
Oak Ridge.
Yeah. I mean, there was so much going on that everybody was so worried about. Everybody thought and everybody felt that we were next.
Yeah. I remember the going back and seeing the video of President Bush getting the word when he was at the school in Florida and listening. He's right in there in front of those kids. And his chief of staff, if I recall, came out and told him that America was under attack. Now, they had already known that there was a plane that hit because they saw that on the monitors
but
before he
walked
that
in
that
there. Was...
Yeah, they didn't know it was. They didn't know until the second plane hit.
Mm-hmm.
No one really knew what happened
because
people didn't really, I mean, you didn't really even see. We don't even have video of the first plane hitting because, you know, it didn't.
No, you just
didn't know to be looking.
Too amateur.
So, yeah.
The two.
I always remember after the fact that Giuliani said when someone told him the plane hit the first tower, a plane just hit the, you know, north tower of the World Trade Center. He looked up and immediately thought, it's a completely clear blue sky. This wasn't an accident.
Right.
This wasn't like weather. This wasn't, you know, and he had, this, but he still, even then, you don't say it because you're like, well, I mean, I guess something could have lost control. I mean,
I still remember in those, was it like 14 or 15 minutes between the two flights hitting that we were at my radio station, we were all talking about, I think it was like back in the 30s, there's that footage of that little plane that like flew into the Empire State Building.
Oh yeah.
And everybody, because that was like what we were, everybody was kind of picturing that when you said a plane flew in, that I don't know why we reverted to that old timey footage. And then we're like, oh, is it same? Like we were saying about the Cessna that we just thought it was
something small.
Yeah.
Plane hit the, I remember that's what it was. A plane hit the building. And we're thinking, we were all, I guess, and the news immediately, just like you were saying, everybody just defaulted to, it was a tiny plane.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know. Because you have a lot of sightseeing planes that go and fly a little too close to buildings all the time. It happens. This was definitely not that, though.
I just, I know we say it in the interview later in the podcast. I'll never, my memory of it will always be the scariest, toughest man I ever met saying, and he said, and it is exactly how he said it, oh my God. And I knew, the hair stood up on my went, what happened? And it was Dick who told us a second plane hit the second tower. And there was just this rush of, we didn't see it. We weren't watching it
happen.
Because
we didn't have a monitor.
We didn't have a monitor, but we knew that, look, okay, we're on the air. And guys, we regret to inform you that America is being attacked. And we don't know what is going on except that two planes have just hit each tower of the World Trade Center.
And think about that, too. Let's just kind of step back for a moment. We were the people who were supposed to be giving all of the information to the public at that point, and we had nothing to rely on except secondhand information coming from secondhand sources, you know, from people watching TV screens. At that point, on that day, we had people who would walk in and go, okay, so this is what's going on. They would kind of give us a little brief. One of us would step out and look at the TV and then come back and jump in and, you know, say, okay, here's what we're seeing right now and that kind of stuff. but it was all secondhand information because we weren't as plugged in back then as we are now.
I mean,
we didn't have our phones.
It's all secondhand information. You're getting it from.
Yeah, but it was.
I remember waiting for the CNN website to refresh.
Yeah,
that we were. We kept hitting refresh, refresh, refresh.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
Because we knew something.
F5 was refresh. I think I wore that button out that day.
I watched a fascinating interview with Charlie Gibson, who was one of the anchors for Good Morning America on that day. It was him and Diane Sawyer. And he said they were in the middle of a commercial and that their executive producer, the guy running the control room, was like, "A plane just hit the World Trade Center. We have a traffic camera that faces it. And we're just going to go to the footage. Go." So again, just like you guys, just like us, they didn't know. And they're on just showing footage. And he said immediately, you know, he's thinking this has got to be a terror attack, but I can't be the one that says it. Because, you know, he said, "I've been preparing my whole life for this moment, but I don't have the information other than I'm literally watching a still camera showing smoke pouring out of a building." And then when the second plane hit and Diane Sawyer goes, "Oh, my God." And she just kind of falls apart. And he was like, and then he said he went into reporter mode. And it was who, what, and the two of them are sending notes back and forth because those two were like real journalists. These weren't these weren't personalities.
It wasn't like they are now where they just kind of, opinion.
I mean, no offense to Michael Strahan. He's great at what he does, but he's not a journalist.
Yeah.
And so he went in and he's saying, okay, we need to know when exactly was the date of the basement attack on the World Trade Center. And he starts writing Bin Laden and Al-Qaeda and all that because he's a news guy. He knows all this. And he's firing off stuff to researchers. And again, before, this was like dial-up, right? Like you didn't have all this stuff. And so they were going through tapes and they're going through file folders. It's crazy when you look at that.
I remember it was probably, so we were on the air until, you know, the end of the morning show, whatever time that was back then. I don't know.
I think it was like 9 a.m.
We ended at 9 or 10. But when we were done, it was probably around 10:30, 11 o'clock where the decision came to stop playing music. Like, we're going to go what we call long form, which is where they simulcast all five of the stations in the building to the, you know, to the news center, to the newsroom, and just do long form news. Commercials, no music on any of the music stations.
I don't think we'd ever done that.
Before that, we'd done it for like
a hurricane.
Yeah. That was it. We went long form so that was on a Tuesday, right? 9/11 was a Tuesday, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And then, so we went long form until Thursday at noon, and then we were back on the air Friday. And then Friday morning, they're like, "We're going to simulcast one more time. We're going to do it at whatever time it was because the president is addressing the nation, and he's going to ask Congress to declare war, we think. I don't know." And they're like, "Okay." So I remember being standing there listening to the president and then one of the greatest accidents in our radio career. Do you have the clip?
No, oh, yeah. I was already prepared before you had begun the story.
This was 3 days after 9/11. Every station in America, every news and TV station is running this audio. But this is what happened at our five radio stations that we used to work at.
"This morning I am sending to Congress a request for
nachos, pizza,
wings,
ribs, or chili. When you..."
That actually happened.
That really happened.
"This morning I am sending to Congress a request for
nachos."
Somebody pressed
the wrong button.
Yeah, there's a
it's an automated switcher
that switches to record the commercials from the radio network, and it just switched right at that moment. Gosh, do you remember?
Oh, Matt Kennedy. Matt was
running,
screaming some of the best cuss words I've ever heard in my life.
Screaming and running down the hall.
That was the first bombs that we threw as America.
Yes.
"This morning I am sending to Congress a request for
nachos."
Oh,
I can
never
still hear
forget
his
that
voice.
Image of Matt Kennedy running down the hall, jumping over chairs, with his tie flaying back, you know, running into the satellite room. And I mean, he switched it in like what, 6, 7 seconds?
He had it done really quick. But the point is, it's still that in our building and everything, that's what he requested. It was nachos.
I'll always remember.
Thanks, Congress.
Thank you. It's really nice that the president wanted Congress to give him nachos, pizza,
and wings. He's placing his dinner order.
Yeah, we weren't able to really laugh about that for a long time.
Oh, no.
If we,
you're wondering course. Why this is, you know, like, I can't believe they laughed at that. We didn't laugh at it at the time.
At the time, we were mortified.
Mortified, yes. And like, I hope nobody heard that. But of course, people heard it because everyone's listening, and yes, this is terrible. Yes. I think it was about 5 years later, I went, hey, you remember? You remember 3 days after 9/11?
And
when,
kudos to you for keeping that audio.
Yeah, of course, I keep everything.
Patrick
but
kept
that
audio, and I was like, what? So it was, I want to say that might have been one of the first golds we ever really cataloged before we had before we started nicknaming them golds, these little audio clips. Mm-hmm. That might have been one of the very first ones that that we put aside and said, we're going to need to hang on to this because one day we're going to want to talk about it.
This morning I am sending to Congress a request. For
nachos, pizza, wings, ribs.
Let me ask you this. Do you remember that earlier that day we had done an interview with a guy who wrote a book about funny 911 phone calls?
Yes.
Yeah, you remember that?
Yes.
Because it was 911 day. Mm-hmm. And so it already stood out. And we did this interview with a guy who wrote a book. And I think it was something like, what's the number for 911? Or some kind of something like that. It was the whole point of the book was these crazy stories of 911 operators and all these stories of stupid things people had called about and done. So we were already celebrating or commemorating the fact that it was 9/11.
Well, it wasn't 9/11 at that point. It was 911.
Yeah, right. Today's 911, just like you know when you dial 911 for an emergency. So here's this silly interview about stupid people calling 911.
And that was, I want to say, within a half an hour before the attacks happened.
Oh,
that
yeah,
was
maybe.
Very close to whenever it all went down. So here we were, you know, being dorky, goofy us, and then we had to switch from door to newscasters. And that was a crazy thing. I mean, to do it on the fly and just kind of go from comic to serious was crazy. I'll never forget just the drama of the day.
Carson, were you on the air when it happened?
Yeah, we were wrapping up our morning show, and oddly enough, it was my first day.
What?
Yeah, it was my first day, and because I had been hired at this radio station.
Where were you? You can say.
Oh, in Hartford, Connecticut.
Oh, okay.
And I'd been hired. They had me on part time, and they decided that you know we like her and she's young. I was on what's called AC. And that's adult contemporary for people not in radio.
It's like light rock.
Your mama's radio station.
This was my grandmama's. We played like Dan Fogelberg.
Oh, yeah.
And the Chi Lights, who I don't even know who they are. And I said
have
their name wrong.
Her?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
it was like, oh, it was Billy, the best of Billy Joel, like over and over. But so they said, like, we like that she's young. Like, because I was really young. I was easily half the age of everybody else that worked there. And they said, we want to bring you in. Like, you go out at night, blah, blah, blah. And so it was my first day, and I'm in my little navy blue, old navy wind pants and a long-sleeved white top because I still, like, it's early in the morning.
What you
and
were
it's
wearing.
I do. It's
oh,
that
wow. That's cool.
I go in and, you know, and I'm settling in, and I'm trying to get a report. And I liked my boss, who was the host and everything, and we're talking. And then all of a sudden, our midday chick calls in on the hotline, and she's like, hey, I'm listening to WCBS out of New York, and a plane hit the World Trade Center, and my boss was super well-versed in world politics, and immediately he says something I'd never heard before, which was Osama bin Laden. I'd never heard that before.
He said it that day.
He said it that, I mean, he said it that minute.
Yeah, because bin Laden had claimed the basement attack.
Right, right. And so he, you know, he says that, and again, there's me and the producer. And we're kind of, like I said earlier, talking about the, no, like, remember that old 30s footage of the plane that's in the Empire State Building? And that's what we were thinking. And then everybody ran to, same thing, the Jock Lounge, when they used to have those, that we had a little TV in there for people that were on the air. And that's when we saw the second plane hit. And then we ended up staying on. And then same as everybody else, we just went to, we turned on WCBS in New York, and that's what we played, I think, for the next 4 days.
Wow.
And then I got on the air that Sunday, and I remember a woman calling me up just so upset that we were saying, like, you know, President Bush is doing this or he's going to do that. And she was like, you need to stop telling him where the stop saying where he's going to be because the terrorists are going to know. And I
remember there was a big concern about
all that. Yeah. And the thing is, like, she's calling me, this little, you know, DJ in Hartford, Connecticut. I'm sure they weren't clued into me. And of course, I'm only getting the information that's being put out in newspapers and on the television. But it was that when you try to explain to someone who maybe is a little bit younger and doesn't realize that the, I've never felt such a feeling of being, I guess, lost or untethered, that we really didn't know hour to hour, day to day, like what was coming next, how do you, the whole idea of even moving forward, that we all just were in this weird floaty space, because you're also dealing with this grief, whether you knew people or not. It was grief as a nation and what you'd been watching.
Well, we were watching The Jumpers. Oh, we were watching all of that stuff. So, yeah, there was definite grief and shock. And I think as a nation, we were all just kind of like, what in the world are we watching?
Everybody was just existing.
Yeah.
In this, again, almost, it was like being was in Jell-O to me. It was, it was kind of suspended animation. And I still have a hard time watching footage.
When President Bush went to the site and was speaking to the workers and, the recovery and the whatnot, and he has the bullhorn, that image, iconic image of him saying, I can hear you, and the people who I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people who knock these buildings down will hear from all of us soon. That bullhorn is now in the museum, the 9/11 museum in New York. I haven't been. I know, Bubba, you went.
So I didn't go to the actual museum like you'd think. I've been to the
site,
plaza,
the memorial,
The memorial, and then I went up into the new World Trade Center building. But I've not gone to the actual museum part, and I should. Have done it. I just didn't have time on my last trip out there. So I will definitely make it out at some
it's
point.
Unbelievable. I'd like to see it sometime soon. It was, it's hard to believe it's been 20 years. And I was just telling Bubba on the show this week that it was so hard to find flags at the time. And there was a store that that's all they did. They sold flags. And I remember they were sold out, and there was this big thing. I ended up paying like $50 for a really nice flag, but a flag that really probably cost me $20.
Right.
That's 20 years ago. And I still have that flag. It's in my garage.
Do you really?
Yeah, I still have it. Hanging in my garage.
It was obviously a very well-made flag.
It's a good, good fabric.
I was going to say, once it's also indoors, it's not getting weathered.
Sign, but it's pretty pretty crazy, and seeing all this stuff about the baseball games coming up tomorrow, the Yankees and the Mets playing, and seeing President Bush throw out the first pitch after 9/11, and I think it was a couple of weeks maybe, or a week and a half, or they kind of got back to it, and he walks out on the field. And
I think
just,
it was the World Series, actually.
It was the World Series.
That was probably like a month later.
And he zipped it. He threw a good, solid pitch, which is – man, that's hard to do kind of pressure with everybody watching you. You've got the world watching you, and you know it.
Of all times to throw a strike, that was the time.
That was it.
And imagine if he had
bounced it
or had gone awry. I mean, what that implications of that would have on the world. Really?
It's so funny that you're bringing that up. But it's true. If he had dribbled it in there or rolled it or sailed it 20 feet to the left or whatever,
that was going on, with everything that was on his shoulders.
Yeah.
Do you think, how many practice pitches could he even have taken?
He warmed up. I know he warmed up in the tunnel or something. But
there are people when they find out they're throwing a first pitch. Right, that they like hire coaches. They really like this was a guy who had really big stuff to attend to. And sure, he warmed up, but to just do what he did.
Did he stand on the mound?
I don't remember.
Or was he in front of the mound?
Yeah, I don't know.
Does it matter?
No.
I mean,
no.
It was.
It does matter because if you've never thrown a pitch, dude, he threw it from the mound. Let me tell you something. That is even more impressive because if you've never thrown from a mound, it's elevated. And I know you don't think it makes that big of a deal, but just being on the hill like that, it's different. It is completely different. So kudos to him for not only throwing a strike, but the complete distance from the mound. I swear, I think he even had his foot on the rubber. Yeah. I mean, so That's pretty cool. Wearing the FDNY shirt or jacket, the whole thing, it's pretty great.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
By the way, and I'm going to say this, and I know you guys are going to like, oh, here it comes. I never would have thought 20 years ago, watching everything going on, that I would end up doing the volunteer firefighting thing. Yeah. I never thought 20 years later that I would become a firefighter.
And I want to make a joke, but no, it seems inappropriate, want to, but so I'm not going to.
It's just so crazy that, you know, the last thing that was on my mind that day was that. There was a lot of us who, there was a lot of talk about, do we go enlist? Where are we, where are we better used? Dee and I think, had conversations of, you know, if we do, what are we best used for? And we didn't want to go in and be, you know, Good Morning Vietnam guys. We were like, we don't want to go in and be broadcasters. We want to make a difference. And ironically, here we are today making a difference. We are broadcasting on AFN to the military around the world. And we didn't know that was a thing at the time, or we didn't know that was an option at the time. And now we do get to connect to everybody, you know, with a little bit of home. And there's a lot of stuff that's changed, and it's kind of worked out in really interesting ways. But yeah, it's like tomorrow, I've got that. We're going to do a big training thing tomorrow morning until about noon on the day. And I'm sure they're going to stop it at the time of the attacks. They have to stop the classes. Yeah. That we're doing. It's some classwork stuff we're doing. And
don't they usually do like the
stairs? Yeah, the stairs. Yeah. Yeah, there's some guys that are doing it. I can't right now with my knee injury that I have, but and also my fat.
I don't know if you guys know this, but Bubba is a volunteer firefighter.
Hey, look, man.
Yeah, he is.
For those of you
I gotta get my one in. That's fine. My joke. That's fine. Come on.
For those of you who want to give back to the community, there's a lot of almost 80% of all firefighters around the country are volunteers. So just saying that.
You and 100% of those 80 tell you.
Do you do CrossFit too?
Yeah, you're a little fizz bump on that. There you go.
Hey, it's math. It works.
Yes.
It does.
Ah, it's great.
I'm going to sit here and sip from my 17 mug.
Did you ever see what like the biggest news stories were in the weeks leading up to 9/11? That somebody went back and said, like, here's what we cared about that summer, and it was shark attacks.
Oh, yeah.
There was, like, this huge thing. And then Chandra Levy.
Chandra Levy.
Yeah.
And didn't that guy get a, like, they
yeah,
found
Gary
out
Condon didn't
Gary
do
Condon
it.
Gary Condon had nothing to do with her being killed.
But his, like, political career was ruined because he was associated with it, and then 9/11 happened, and we were like.
So if you don't really know, he was a congressman. Do you remember, though, that it was the big news story?
I remember the Chandra Levy thing. I don't know anything
about
it.
Was she like an intern?
Yeah, she was an intern.
She was an intern in this congressman's office, and then they found her dead body. And there was like this whole thing about maybe
she
having
an affair
with
him.
Why is she dead? Yeah. Was this some kind of thing?
So everybody assumed it was him just right off the bat?
Yes, they all, like, well, and I think it came out that maybe they were involved.
There was
some flirtation.
That's the point. We don't even really know anymore. But
it was the big story for like the 5 days before.
And it was the big scandal. Like they said, there was no news going on. That's why they were like, everybody like sunk their teeth into shark attacks and Chandra Levy. That it was, we're gonna fill your news with this because we have nothing else.
And then we had nothing but 9/11 for months. Mm-hmm. I mean, people forget. People are like, oh, and then we went to war in Afghanistan. No, we went to Iraq first. No, we went to Afghanistan first.
Was it Afghanistan first?
Yes, we didn't go to Iraq until 2003.
Okay.
But it was weeks. It was like 5 weeks, I think.
Iraq was the weapons of mass destruction hunt.
But I think... For that 5 weeks, we kept waiting for. We knew that there was going to be some kind of retribution, some kind of attack, some kind of declaration of war on somebody, but we didn't know when.
Yeah. And what's the movie where they're on the horses and they go in and they, you know, the one I'm talking about?
I do know. Oh, they go ahead of it.
Thor is in it. Yeah, they're like the first guys to go in, and they didn't have any equipment, so they literally mounted the attack, the raid, or whatever on horses. I have not seen the movie, so I can't.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's Thor.
What is that? Yeah, it's based on a true story.
I have no idea.
Oh, well, we all need to find out and watch it because apparently that's supposed to be a really crazy, insane story of bravery and. You know,
yeah,
that's crazy that none of us can remember the name of it.
I know exactly what you're talking about, though. I think I've seen pieces of it.
Chris Hemsworth 9/11 movie, 12 Strong.
I think that's right.
In the wake of the September 11th attacks, Captain Mitch Nelson leads a U.S. Special Forces team into Afghanistan for an extremely dangerous mission. Outgunned and outnumbered, it's a ruthless enemy that takes no prisoners.
Sounds about right.
Okay.
12 strong. Okay. I'll make a point to watch that.
Based on Horse Soldiers by Doug Stanton. So,
Yeah, okay.
Makes sense.
Wow. Well, I guess we'll probably, I think Bubba said it earlier today, we probably won't have this extent of 9/11 talking for another.
Well, we really covered it pretty heavy on the show between interviews and recollections and tributes and all that. It was, I mean, we had to. For those of you who lived through it, those of you like us, we needed to take that time to look back and realize what we've all been through. And realize what these families sacrifices over the years. You know, you talk about the 343 firefighters, or all the other first responders who passed away, or those who were in the towers, or those who jumped to their deaths. But don't forget the other deaths that followed afterwards. Those who are dealing with respiratory issues today. Those who have died from cancers. Those who have died in the military conflicts attached to those days. I mean, there's the true number of people who passed away because of those attacks may never be known.
Yeah. Well said. Anything else before we get into the...
No.
Hold on just one second.
Hold on.
Okay. Hold on just one second.
Okay.
This morning I am sending to Congress a request.
For
nachos.
Pizza. If we never air
the plate. What is that? Before you know it, Mother, pling, pling, plum, plum.
I could go without ever hearing that again.
Really?
Yeah.
I think
makes
that's
your
now.
Whole body sink a little bit, doesn't it?
Does. Yeah. And at least now we can retire that for a bit.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And we'll bring it up again in 5 more years.
We'll bring it up every 9/11. It'll come up. Thank you again for O'Reilly Auto Parts for sponsoring the podcast. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening, however you do it. Remember, if you're on YouTube, subscribe to our channel. Share the video because otherwise, nobody gets to watch these. Nobody else but, the three of us, the four of us. Subscribe to the channel. Do the little bell. That way you get the notifications and you never miss it whenever we get new videos
out. And give
us
a rating on everything else. If you're listening to this on Apple Podcast or Google, whatever
give us the
Spotify,
best rating ever.
That's right. Give us a thumbs up and a high rating.
Yeah, if you don't like it, don't rate it. But if you like it, rate it high.
5-star rating, man. Come on.
And again, those really cool interviews, firefighter Brenda Berkman and Richard Marcinko, founder of SEAL Team 6, are coming up right after the closing jingle on the audio version of the podcast.
This was the podcast, but now it's over. That's okay, because you can listen to the regular show on the radio every day.
Except Sundays.
It was the podcast.
One of our favorite people in the world is Dick Marcinko. He's retired U.S. Navy SEAL commander, Vietnam War veteran, first commanding officer of SEAL Team 6. Yeah, he started SEAL Team 6.
He invented it.
He always says that he made it number 6 because the Russians didn't know that we only had 2. And so he went to 6. They realized they thought we had 3, 4, and 5.
They're like, wait, they have more SEAL teams than we knew?
He is a true American hero, and it's an honor to speak with him. Richard Marcinko. What's up, Dick? How are you, man? How many years has it been since we've talked?
20?
I think 2 lifetimes.
It has been 20. It has literally been 20 years. Do you remember being on the phone with us on the morning of 9/11?
Vaguely.
Yeah.
We do, and it's not vaguely. I remember it like it was yesterday. We watched the first plane hit. And, Big D and I are both pilots, so we knew. We're looking at the profile of the hole, and we're like, that is not a single-engine Cessna like they were reporting. We thought it was a terrorist attack. We called to get you on the phone to discuss it, and within seconds, you get on the phone, and the words that came out of your mouth were, oh, my God, as the second plane hit the other tower. And at that moment, we knew, all of us, we knew that America was under attack 100%. There was no more doubt about it.
Yeah, that's true. My original thoughts were it was an executive jet from New Jersey that had, an engine malfunction or something and lost control, went into the tower. And as you just said, it wasn't long after, obviously it was a planned attack. And what was even more ludicrous to me is in one of the Rogue Warrior books prior to that, I had mentioned terrorists using kamikaze attack, and now here it is looking at it in play. Watching it on TV that morning, I wasn't sure whether I was watching the real world or whether it was a pilot from a TV or a movie screen. Mm-hmm. It was that unreal.
You know, something I've always wanted to ask you is after when that second plane hit, you bailed and had your phones were ringing and there were things going on, and you said, "I got to go," and you left. And I always wanted to know what happened after that, after you hung up with us.
I did some quick research. I got on the phone and called the contacts any place that I knew could have some input, and the most immediate call I made was to a daughter that lived in the Lower East Side of New York City.
Yeah.
And in fact, she was in the no-go zone, and I was able to get her out. Actually got some law enforcement friends from New Jersey to take a small boat across, and she made it, and we got her out. But, it was unreal to have America to be invaded, and that significant a structure.
Now that you look back on it, 20 years later, are we safer than we were 20 years ago?
Somewhere between no and hell no.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a matter of we've adjusted to the normalcy of, oh, it's just that again, and we have a lot more domestic terrorism than we had back then. And that we as a society have just lost concern over killing people and death.
Yeah.
So it's we ain't no safer.
No. Well, we are so appreciative of you. And all these years, you know, you've been on our minds. And by the way, if you've never read any of the Rogue Warrior series books, books in the series, you need to do that.
I will be honest, the Rogue Warrior book, the very first book, the autobiography, the one you wrote when you were in prison, that book got me back into reading again. So, I mean, you know, it takes a lot to get a dude who's like, you know, in the woods and whatever, fishing and whatever, to stop and read a book.
Dick, he actually learned to read from you.
I learned to read because of your books.
He was illiterate before.
No, it takes me back, and I just want to say thank you as Big D said, for all your service.
You're welcome, but I didn't use any big words.
No, you did not. You did not. You used a lot of acronyms and everything. It was great.
Lots of Vietnam pics.
No, but I just, you know, we love you, man, and you are always going to be tied to that morning for us, and that memory of hearing those words out of your mouth as the second plane hit. It's going to always be there in the back of my mind, and you're always in our hearts, man.
Well, I'll be 81 in November.
Jeez.
So 10 years from now, when we do the 30th, you have my permission to give me a ring-a-ding, and we'll do this again, because I plan to live to be 100 so I can piss off more people.
Demo Dick.
Gotta have focus.
Gotta have focus, Demo Dick. The one and only Richard Marcinko. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. All the best.
You're welcome.
See you, man.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, Brenda Berkman is joining us. She's a New York City firefighter. She's on the front lines on 9/11. Good morning, Brenda. How are you?
Good morning. Is this Big D or Bubba?
It's actually both of us.
Nice to be with you.
Yeah.
Really honored to be with you. I understand you reach out to the Navy ships at sea, and I'm honored to be able to speak with you today.
Oh, well, we've got pretty much everybody. If there's a base around the world, AFN allows us to kind of keep everybody connected to home.
Fantastic. I want to thank everyone for their service.
I wanted to ask you about your experience on 9/11 and kind of give us a look into your world on that morning.
So I was off duty, but I managed to get myself with a group of other off-duty firefighters and officers to the World Trade Center. Just as the North Tower fell down, the second tower to fall, and we were there without any real equipment. We didn't have radios or breathing apparatus because all that stuff had gone with the first responders that had been dispatched already to the Trade Center. And we're enveloped in this gigantic dust cloud. And When it cleared, I saw a group of my own off-duty firefighters from my firehouse in Manhattan, and they also had no equipment. But we got an assignment. We started to work, and I had almost 20 years on the fire department at that point. I was a very experienced officer, and I'd gone to many high-rise fires, but I could never imagine what I was looking at that day. It was worse than your worst nightmare or horror movie. And I honestly felt like there was a very good chance we could die. So we were working, looking for anyone who might have survived to pull them from the rubble and to help get some water on the fires, because it was impossible to even approach certain areas because everything was on fire. You have to think about 16 acres of the collapse zone, but then all the surrounding buildings were on fire, and we had no water because the water mains were broken. So it was a very, very challenging day. About 5:20 in the afternoon, seven World Trade Center fell down, 47-story building, and we were in the collapse zone for that. So we ran down the street and ran into a building to get out of the debris that was raining down on us. It really was a matter of luck as to who survived and who died that day.
So you were talking about how you didn't have any kind of breathing apparatus on and whatnot. Are you currently, or maybe I guess some of the other firefighters you were with, going through any kind of respiratory issues?
Oh, absolutely. From the get-go, people started coming down with serious respiratory problems and digestive problems, and now, you know, slower developing cancers. So we're still very concerned, not only the first responders who were there, but the survivors and the residents of the neighborhood, even the school children who were in the schools in the area. You know, we're all very concerned about what are the long-term effects of this. We've lost two women firefighters from the FDNY to 9/11-related illness, and many men, as well as police and EMTs and, of course, civilians. So this is a continuing concern for people who were in New York and exposed to World Trade Center dust.
Yeah, as a volunteer firefighter, we hold the 343. That you'll see that number on the back of fire trucks all over America, 343. And that is to honor the firefighters who died during the World Trade Center attacks. And that number can easily be tripled, I'm sure, with the people who have now fallen due to cancer or other respiratory issues. So, you know, that's something that has to be addressed. There was a big fight in Congress recently about all that, and we've all seen that kind of stuff, but definitely something that does not need to be ignored. The health of our firefighters and police and any of the first responders who went in during the weeks and months afterwards in the cleanup effort. There's a lot of people fighting for their lives right now today, and we definitely want to make sure that they are not forgotten as well.
Well, thank you for that. And you know, it's sad that people are very quick to wave the flag sometimes right after an event, but then as time goes on, they forget, because, you know, we have a lot of people who weren't even alive on 9/11. And it's like my generation trying to figure out what had happened at Pearl Harbor. So, you know, it's really important that the full picture of what had happened on 9/11 and then the subsequent years, that be put out there and that folks hear these stories.
Brenda, thank you so much. I know you're a volunteer guide at the Tribute Museum, and I think that's what a great service to continue that and telling the story of what happened on that day at 9/11. Brenda Berkman, New York City firefighter, thank you for your service. Thank you for the time and telling us your story. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Big D and Bubba. Really honored to be able to talk to you today. Stay safe, everybody.
Absolutely. Thank you.